such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here to wrinkle your brain. That's what it is. Wrinkle your brain hour. And privileged to be able to join the ranks of those who share an hour of Catholic thought and dialogue or monologue, as it sometimes is when I get to talk with you, I guess at you, because I can't really talk with you when it's a one-way microphone, right? I yearn for nice discussions, but hopefully, I will continue to offer you things to really chew on and to help form our mind, our conscience, our way of looking at things. Especially, I like to touch on the issues that are current today and offer a little bit of a different perspective. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about this the other day, which I'm going to share with you, is is it worth my time to do this radio show? I love doing it, and I pray and I hope you love listening. And I think I say yes. It is definitely worth doing it if I offer something a little unique. If I'm just repeating what you're hearing everywhere else, then it's not necessary for me to just say it the same thing. Though hearing it
danger,
from
Will Robinson. Oh, danger, yeah, there, there. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
There are many dangers in hosting a radio show, and there's somewhat danger in listening to a radio show. It can really wrinkle your brain, and it can focus us in other ways.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, indeed. So, but I do pray every day, and as a matter of fact, I almost always spend a little time in the beautiful St. Stanislaus Kostka Church here that has the side adoration space. You could call it the adoration chapel, even though it doesn't have walls around. It's in the main body of the church, which is kind of unique and kind of nice. And so every time I come to you, I come to you after praying that the Lord will help me inspire you and wrinkle your brain and add to the conversation and the discussion of the many Catholic things going on today. So be that as it may, those who get my flock notes, that's a little Catholic version of tweets, I guess. It's not really a tweet, but it's like an email. And I'll repeat again, if you would like to get be on my flock note list, where I try to, I don't always, unfortunately, get around to it, but I try to send out a little theme of the day. And today's theme, if you do want to get on that list, just send me an email at my email address, which is unlikeothernations@gmail.com, that without any spaces, all uncaps, small letters, unlikeothernations@gmail.com. I've referred to that crazy email address of mine many times. It's a meditation on the 8th chapter of 1 Samuel, when Israel disappointed God because Israel wanted to be a nation like other nations, which implies, of course, God wanted Israel not to be a nation like other nations. That implies, of course, God wanted Israel to be a nation unlike other nations. And I think that could be applied to almost any nation at all, but especially nations that have pretty significant roles in the international world of nations. And of course, the United States certainly qualifies for that. Every nation should strive to be a most favored nation in the eyes of God. There is actually a political phrase and a category that we use in the United States that uses that term, most favored nation. We use that as to designate nations that are friends of the United States, and we take it away or we don't give it to those nations that we consider unfriendly or even, as far as we can maybe say, enemies of our nation. To think that all nations are equally our friends, or to say that no one is our enemy, or to say that that kind of give and take, good and bad, that goes on within the realm of relationships between people doesn't exist within nations. And that's some, I think a lot of progressively minded people sort of think that you don't, there is no such thing as a good or bad relationships between nations. That to me seems like a very silly thought, especially when there's such a the reality today of other nations that are guided by so many different religions and ideologies that are attached to those religions that are quite bent on seeing America fall, as it were. So anyway, speaking of that, and so the flock note that I sent out was, I'm going out on a limb here, because the immigration issue is so dominant in the news today, and because it's hard to talk about the sides, it's easy to be firmly positioned on the shall we say, send them back side of the argument. And there are a number of people that just think of it only as that, send as many people back to their native lands who came here illegally. And then on the other side are those who are saying, let us be an open bordered nation. And there really should be just a completely open policy, an open door policy for any people who want to come here. Both of those seem to me very, very wrong. And so here's the angle that I want you to think about today. And it's kind of hit me, and I hope this helps in a very real way. It was said the other day on some news story that I was listening to, that we're at a point now, we're still in the middle of negotiations. President Trump has pushed, and I say rightly so, President Trump has pushed the Congress to figure this out. And let me stop for that on this point for a second. I think that is a very wise thing to do in his position. Number one, it will deflect, or it should deflect, a lot of the negativity that is levied against the president, especially those who are on the complete open border policy side, they like to say, or they like to think, that it is this one man, the president, who is standing in the way or is trying to hurt many of the people who are here without coming through the lawful means, through the immigration organizations of the country. And so that the president is saying, Congress, get it, fix it somehow. He's rightfully saying it's not, don't blame me in a certain sense. It's not my simple issue. It's naive or immature to think that it is a one-man issue and he can solve it or ruin it all by himself. I think the people on the strong open border, I'll say complete open border stand, I don't want to say that the opposite of an open border is an absolute closed border. There's something called a door, and you go in and out of the door. The border would not just be a wall. It would be a wall with doors, which is kind of what we're mostly used to in most of our homes. The idea of build a wall, I think, should be augmented a little bit. And those who are crying, give us the wall, we want a wall, I think we should be quick to add, give us a wall with doors in it. That sort of changes the makeup. Now, of course, you need to have a different approach to the doors, obviously, but not just a wall. As far as I know, I don't think there were doors in the wall that separated East Berlin from West Berlin after the Cold War or during the Cold War. There must have been. The Brandenburg Gate is the famous one door. I don't know. Maybe there were a lot of others, but that was the one door. And of course, it was highly, highly guarded, and you didn't go through very easily. So anyways, the fact that the president did throw this in the lap or in the hands of the Congress, I think is a very wise thing, because it places it in the context of the whole nation. It is not just one man dictating what he thinks is right versus what another one man dictating what he thinks is right or wrong. In this, he is definitely not following the modus operandi of the previous president, President Obama. Obama decidedly tried to sidestep the Congress, which is why he got the reputation of trying to be a king or an emperor. You don't have to argue these things out with the populace. You don't. It doesn't need to be discussed with representatives who are representatives of the people, of the whole people. So that's one good thing about it. And here's the rub, and why I want to bring together the issue of immigration, as we hear it debated, even as we speak, I think, and what is known as PRI. Some of you may be familiar with PRI. Some of you probably are not. As I send out in my flock note, the theme, usually I want to start with a theme, and then I go into a number of different directions, and I assume the same will be for today. But anyways, immigration and PRI. PRI is the letters PRI, which stand for the present ruling political party in Mexico. PRI is I'm not sure if I have the exact translation, but it's something to the effect of Partido Revolucionario de Independencia, the Independent Revolutionary Party. It is, as I say, the present ruling party in Mexico. But a very important thing for us to realize is that it is the return to power of the political party that dominated Mexico for about 100 years. President Vicente Fox, so some of us will remember, who was just a president before Calderon, and Fox was the first, I believe he was the first, if maybe the second, but I think he was the first one elected as president of Mexico that was not of PRI, the Partido Revolucionario de Independencia. The name of his party escapes me, but it wasn't PRI. But PRI was that party that began with the Mexican Revolution. Or no, I want to say that. The Mexican Revolution goes back to like 1810 when Padre Hidalgo issued his famous Gritos de Dolores, the cry of the suffering, and that started the movement for independence of Mexico from Spain. Much like the 13 colonies in the United States, Grant got their independence from England. The only thing in common between our two revolutions was the fact that there were colonies in the New World breaking loose of their mother countries in Europe. But other than that, they were very, very different. And I love to go into that sometime. But we're going to take a quick break, right, Nick? And I want to illustrate a way of thinking about the immigration issue in regard to PRI and I think we have to really, really be mindful of and cautious of. Well, anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyce, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDC.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Do you have loved ones who are away from the church? Do you feel helpless, anxious, or concerned because people you love no longer consider themselves Catholic? My name is Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. I am a religious sister with the Daughters of St. Paul, but I am also a former atheist. I was raised Catholic but rejected my faith for over 10 years. Evangelizing our friends and family is the most difficult kind of evangelization, but it is possible. I have written a book called The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, to help you invite your loved ones back to the church. You can find more information about this book at pauline.org/prodigalyoulove. Together, let's start an evangelization revolution.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. And I'm going to just jump right from that beautiful promo there of evangelization of revolution of evangelization. Take quite seriously what that word revolution really means. Revolution. You're throwing off one huge way of operating in terms of government rules and forms of government and taking on a whole new one. I remember one of my great history teachers back in high school, Mr. Monteleone. I still remember that great Italian name. He was a really wonderful teacher, and he often criticized the fact that the word revolution was used too frequently, so much that it lost its meaning. He often repeated, there's only a few real revolutions that we could see throughout history. American Revolution, he did see as one. But many times the what were called revolutions, especially in, to be perfectly honest, a lot of the changes of power within the Hispanic world, Latin American world, were not really revolutions, that they threw off one complete form of government in preference to another. Is that throwing out one leader and choosing another kind of reminds me of a sort of a dry or little black humor joke that I often share with some of my Hispanic friends when I say, you know what they call elections in Latin America. What do they call elections in Latin America? Assassinations. sad to say, just that that one party takes over office violently, but often will just continue the same kind of government, at least in terms of philosophical ideologies. So it's not really a revolution. So, but here's the rub that one of the lines that I've heard. Maybe you've heard this, and it's hard to digest, but it's worth chewing on because I think there is tremendous wisdom in it. It was said. I think maybe this one I was listening to the Bill Bennett show. You can catch Bill Bennett on podcasts. He's a great thinker. He's a Catholic guy. Used to be, shall we say, very liberal and progressive. I think he would readily admit when he was younger, but he's a much more conservative thinker, as it were, today. But anyways, he said, as the immigration debate stands at present, there is a sense that the Democratic Party doesn't want to solve the problem. And I got to stop there for a second. Wait a minute. How can anyone say that? It was said in the context of what President Trump offered the Democratic side of the debate, and I'm just going to paint with broad brushes here. The Democratic side of the debate is standing firmly against a wall, no doubt about it, and also firmly for open borders, shall we say, and the free flow of immigrants and amnesty for those who are here already. And President Trump just the other day said, okay, we'll grant you a pathway to citizenship for the DACA, the children who are here illegally brought by their parents, if you vote for a wall. And that's a big concession, as it were, from the president's perspective, because many on the other side, the send them back crowd, would scream bloody murder. They don't want a pathway to citizenship for any of those who came to this country illegally. Therefore, President Trump was willing to anger many of his conservative supporters because he was trying to cut a deal, as it were, and he's looking at getting the wall as a great gain, and to grant the young adults, they're basically young adults now who are brought here by their parents, granting them a pathway to citizenship, he figures that's a darn good trade-off, and let's do it. But the Democrats rejected it, and he was so frustrated. I think it was Bill Bennett that was saying that indicates that the we'll call it the open border side crowd is not really interested in getting a solution. Now, hearing that, I can almost hear the people screaming at their radio if they're listening to me now and are on the open border side of the argument. And they're saying, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. It is the Democrats that have always pushed for immigration reform and the bringing about of some kind of amnesty for those who did come here illegally. So how could you possibly say that the Democrats don't want to solve the issue? Well, there's two things. Just what I said first is if they would have said yes to the wall for the DACA recommendations, that would have solved the issue in a big way, in a great way. But they said no. I'm sure they would say because we want more than that. But here's the rub, and here's where it reminds me of even the name of the political party that's in power in Mexico now, and my appreciation for the almost 200 years history. It's more than 200 years. From 1810 was when Father Hidalgo did his famous Grito de Dolores and started the Mexican Revolution to throw off the power of Spain. So it's 217 years, 218 now. but to appreciate those 218 years, you have to understand a sort of a vicious circle, or a sad vicious circle. I had a philosophy teacher that used to love the phrase, and when he said it, he wanted us to memorize it. When philosophy teachers or any teacher repeat something over and over again, that's usually an indication that they think it's important, and you'd be wise to remember it. And he used to say, "The eternal return of the same. We must always be ready to perceive what is the eternal return of the same." I think we have some modern day similar phrases when we say the more things change, the more they stay the same, or we say history repeats itself, those kinds of thoughts. And we should. And I think he's true. When you analyze the history of Mexico and you see one revolution after another, one throwing out the bums after another, you begin to see there's a problem with the political strategy or the political identity. And this is where we've got to appreciate the silliness of PRI. What I mean by that is when your party is constantly in revolution for independence, you run into a very bad state of affairs once you become the leaders. You know, the way we live in societies that are structured with governmental and administrative authorities and all the rest, you may be able to identify yourself as a rebel while you are out of power and you are part of the oppressed group. Oppressed by whom? Oppressed by those in authority. You get it? So the very fact that the ruling party in Mexico has the word revolution in it as like an eternal part of their identity is very problematic. But that sheds light on what Bill Bennett said about the Democrats who are obstructing a solution to the immigration problem, even when what almost everything that they're asking for is offered them. Why? Well, we gotta answer that question, why? And we're going to do that as soon as we come back. I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Coyce here on a typical Wednesday on the Winds of Change. So happy to be able to share this time with you. With some...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Brain wrinkling. And... I know I'm treading where angels fear to go. I know I'm talking about things.
Danger, that, Will Robinson.
The danger.
Danger.
Yes.
No, Will Robinson. Danger.
Whenever a priest starts talking political thoughts, it is dangerous. But I do believe politics is a noble aspect of our lives still, even though there's so much ways of corrupting it. But that doesn't mean just because food can be tainted doesn't mean food is corrupt. Food is a good thing. And the whole political world is important, and we need to be associated with it. And I am trying to make some sense of the immigration debate that's going on today. And I want to point out something that was pointed out when the Democrats refused to accept an offer by President Trump that much of what they were looking for in terms of amnesty for DACA young adults and children would be granted them if they voted for a wall. A wall, I might like to say, should always be said a wall with doors and even windows so that people can see through. Of course, you don't need windows in a wall along the southern border to see what's going on in America. All you need is a TV or an internet connection. And so, voila, we see what's going on. Anyone can see what's going on in the United States. And for many people in other parts of the world, what they see going on in the United States is a lot better than what's going on in their country, and therefore they would love to live here. When we speak of the wall, I want everyone to say, remember, the wall will have doors. That's all we need to say, and that changes the whole dynamics of it, I certainly believe. But the fact that the Democratic Party was saying no to that deal made Bill Bennett come up with the thought that the Democrats really don't want to solve the issue, don't want a solution to the problem, which would make many people in the Democratic Party rage with great anger, and the hair would stand on the back of their necks and all the rest of those kinds of things that happen when you are mad at something someone said. So because they will jump up and down and scream bloody murder, saying, we are the ones who want to solve the immigration issue. But I think there's wisdom in what Bill Bennett was saying, because it is very, it's similar to the spirit of PRI, that are the initials of the ruling party in Mexico now, the Partido Revolucionario de Independencia, the Revolutionary Party of Independence. I was starting to say before the break, you can get away with identifying yourself as a rebel or as a revolutionary party when you are out of power. You want to throw out those who are in power. You want to take over the strings of power. But to be a party that identifies itself with an eternal revolution, in other words, the revolution is always ongoing, and you are always then looking to overthrow some authority. Well, but when you're in authority, you don't want to be thrown out of authority. So it changes radically who you're against. And so those in authority that have this eternal revolutionary identity will obviously not identify the bad guys with their own party. They got to make the bad guys others. And others is often defined as the rich and the wealthy, because there's always fewer of them than the poor and the masses. So the idea that the Democratic Party doesn't really want to solve the issue is somewhat credible, because the issue, even if you're in power, is good to stay in power. Are you following? And a good thing to point out is the fact that when President Obama was president and he had a Democratic Congress to work with, they didn't change the rules. And, of course, they would then blame the only reason why we couldn't change the rules is because of the obstructionist Republicans. But the fact that they had the majority and they had the votes, they didn't pull it off. And part of the reason they didn't pull it off is because the immigration debate is good for keeping the Hispanic population in their party. Obviously, if Donald Trump wins over many of the Hispanics, there's a chance they may become Republican, which would be more disastrous for the Democratic Party than any wall would be. And that's how this spirit of an eternal revolution is bad. It's very, very bad. You can, I couldn't give you some ways of thinking about an eternal revolution if you are thinking about the ultimate battles between good and evil. Now that seems to work. There can and there should be a deep sense in all of our hearts that ever since the beginning of time until the end of time, there will be a battle between good and evil. Those who fancy themselves promoting goodness will always be fighting against what they consider wrong and evil. So you have to supernaturalize it. You have to supranationalize it. You have to consider good and evil in terms more than... Oh, boy.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Then, Nick, you got that? Did you just sort of swallow it all just right there? Oh, I'm very happy then. Very good. It's a challenging concept to swallow, but it really is worth it. As a way to give some light to this different perspective on the immigration issue, I want to read to you a wonderful journal writings from a book I'm reading now on Father de Smet. Father de Smet was one of these early Jesuit missionaries during the early 1800s. And it's worth meditating on and applying a certain kind of lesson that America could have, should have, but didn't really learn. But by reading these journal entries, by seeing the attitude and the work with the Native American Indians that Father de Smet was very well known for, Father de Smet is kind of known as the Apostle of the Rocky Mountains. He started out in St. Louis and worked his way through the Plain States and eventually got to the Rocky Mountains, baptizing and preaching to so many different Indian tribes. Why am I bringing this up? Because he also was a deeply patriotic fellow. He loved what he saw going on in America. And he was very optimistic about getting the Indians to become good Americans as they became good Christians, good Catholics especially. It's one and the same thing for us. A lot of people like to make the distinction, but there are, of course, a lot of differences between Catholicism and Protestantism. But As Father de Smet went to the tribes of the West, he found, and this is what blows my mind because I was not aware that there were so many Indian tribes that were so open to Christianity. And being open to Christianity is a doorway and a window and all whatever else analogy you could come to the good virtues of early America, because it was touted as and proudly built as a nation that was building its fame and fortune on Christian principles. No matter what modern historians are trying to tell us, it is so evidently obvious that they didn't want a theocracy is obvious. They didn't want a government that was following one religion over another, but in their mind that meant we want a religion that is not establishing one Christian denomination over another. Do you see the important difference in what I just said? They didn't want a theocracy. That's pretty clear, and everybody can agree with that. But the early American founders, when they wanted a nation that would not highlight or establish one religion over the other, they were primarily thinking of, we don't want one Christian denomination to be established over other Christian denominations. The idea of non-Christian denominations hardly entered their mind. Yes, there were a few Jewish people, and they did, that started to open the door. There were virtually no Muslims, virtually no Buddhists, virtually no Hindus, but oddly enough, Catholics were considered hardly a Christian denomination. That's one of the sore points, and something that us Catholics graciously forget. I say graciously forget because I'm following what I love Pope Benedict XVI says in the forgetfulness of God. I like that phrase, the forgetfulness of God. It's a beautiful thing to think. God does forget things. And that ties into the whole idea of heaven as the eternal now, which is a beautiful thought that Peter Kreft shares with us when he's trying to explain what heaven is. And by the way, too, you have to subscribe to my Unlike Other Nations YouTube channel. I'm starting a series on Peter Kreft's book, Everything You Wanted to Know About Heaven. I will try to unpack the rather deep philosophical pages of that book, and I hope I can make them make more sense in a parochial or a common folk type presentation. As I said in my intro to the YouTube channel, Unlike Other Nations, I said, I'm dedicating this to my mother, dear mother, who is up there in age, and she knows she's not immortal, and she knows God will call her home one day. And so she likes to think about what heaven's going to be like. And I think that's a tremendously good thing to do when you're up in age. Actually, it should be done from the moment you can start thinking. But Peter Kreft offers that beautiful thought that heaven is, in a sense, God's eternal now, and only the good exists, and the evil and the bad is burned away. It's annulled. That's why I think what Peter Kreft teaches us about heaven is the key to understanding the proper meaning and importance of annulments in our Catholic life. And why the, shall we say, progressive liberal interpretation of Amoris Laetitia needs to read Peter Kreft's Everything You Want to Know About Heaven, because the rules on earth from us Catholics only make sense in understanding what heaven is like and understanding what the Garden of Eden is like. That comes into play too. And that's an essential part of John Paul II's theology of the body. Of course, it leads us to the right interpretation of human sexuality and right and wrong in terms of artificial birth control, artificial contraception, and sterilizations and transgenderism and all the rest. But a beautiful, powerful part of John Paul's theology of the body, which I think is somewhat missed often in the wonderful presentations of the theology of the body, is the very important distinction between time before original sin, that is time in paradise, time in the Garden of Eden, the rest of history, and thirdly, so the first segment of time, the first epic is Garden of Eden, the second epic of history, according to John Paul's beautiful writings, and it's perfectly in harmony with so much of what we've thought up to now anyways, is all of human history from the fall to the end of time of history. But then the third epic of history is heaven. So these three times must be kept fully distinguished. And when we fail to distinguish these three times, we run into terrible problems. And so what I'm afraid, I desperately wish that Pope Francis and many other theologians today that seem to be ignoring the importance of annulments that we as Catholics have lived with. Admittedly, it's a pain in the neck. I tell everybody who ever comes for help with an annulment that I know it's a pain in the neck, but it's a grace-filled pain in the neck. And part of the reason is because it ties into what Pope Benedict XVI says with God's forgetfulness. Everything in heaven is good. Everything in heaven is the beautiful. Everything in heaven is right, and there is no evil, there's no wrong, there's no ugliness. And so there needs to be a kind of an annulling, an annihilation of past when it involves bad, when it involves evil, when it involves hatred and all these other things that are always part of the makeup of a divorce. I don't think you can get around that. There's always some. So Pope Benedict says there's a forgetfulness of in the mind of God, and that becomes complete in heaven and started here on earth. And so why did I jump off to that tangent? Because I got to come back to the fact that Catholic Americans conveniently, or not so conveniently, but graciously forget the fact that the early American Christian Protestants didn't consider Catholicism as a religion that belonged to the group of religions known as Christians. Are you following me? For the Protestants of the early American days, Catholicism was the bugaboo, the boogeyman. Today, my friends, that religion, which is objectively not Christian, once we get over the fact that Catholics are Christians, and I proudly say so. We are the first Christians. We are the model Christians, but that'll be what others will dispute, but I will defend. But anyways, if we get over the hurdle and we begrudgingly swallow the fact that Catholics are Christians, you cannot then at the same time say that Muslims are Christian. And Muslims today are the religion that is not Christian. But see, that plays, when we go back to the early thinking of the early Protestant Christian leaders, and they said they want a nation that is not establishing one religion over another, they didn't think of having all religions equal to each other. And so that's an issue that we really have to struggle with today. So in that context, here's something that Father De Smet says about his success with the Indians. And he talks about a nation, a tribe of Indians that I never even heard of before, but he says was one of the most beautiful tribes that he encountered. He says, the little nation of the Flatheads, that's the tribe called the Flatheads, reminds me of the enemy in the Dick Tracy cartoons, remember? The little nation of the Flatheads appears to us to be a chosen people out of which a model tribe can be made. They will be the kernel of a Christianity that even Paraguay could not surpass in fervor. Now, why does he mention Paraguay? Because Paraguay was having great success. That's down in South America. They're having great success with Christianizing the Indian tribes down there, and they wrote up their pastoral plan, as it were, and sent it to Rome. And so the pastoral plan to evangelize the Paraguayans became a sort of model. And here's Father de Smet saying that the Flatheads are going to be they're going to surpass the fervor of the Christian Indians in Paraguay. So he says, "We have greater resources for obtaining such results than did the Spanish fathers. Remoteness from corrupt influences. The Indians' aversion to the other sex." What that he means is as Father de Smet was speaking to the Indians, especially these Flatheads, but then many other tribes, the Indians often didn't want to be taught Christianity from the Protestant missionaries. They sent some of them back and said, "We want a black robe." There was a very, very powerful spirituality contained in the celibacy of the black robe. That is to say, the man who came to preach about God, who didn't carry a gun and didn't have any wife, obviously took away two of the great fears of any tribal leader. Namely, if another tribe comes in with greater weapons, they can conquer you. Oftentimes, the black robes and the Catholic missionaries would come in with no weapon, and they would wonder, what kind of man is this? And the fact that he didn't take a wife meant that this missionary wasn't going to come after their women. So the Indians often preferred the Catholic missionaries. So, and also in the tribe, Father de Smet goes on to say, there was an innate horror of idolatry. They didn't worship false idols. There was a natural liking for the white man, and for the black robe in particular, whose name for him is synonymous with goodness, learning, and piety. The central position of the mission, sufficient land for several settlements, fertile soil, the protection of high mountains, no meddlesome and petty authority conflicting with that of God and those who represented him upon earth. No tribute to pay but our prayers. Such are the advantages our missions enjoys. Furthermore, the Indians are convinced that without religion, there is no happiness, either in this life or in the world to come." Isn't that precious? That's very precious. And the reason I'm sharing with you, and I want to connect this idea with the immigration thing, is because—
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Thank you very much for the few seconds I have left. This connects to the immigration issue in the sense that when you are converting someone to a way that you believe is the true way, the right way, you welcome more of those people. And that's one of the reasons why I personally say that the effort to bring new Americans into America without appreciating the great Christian heritage of America and the anti-socialist, anti-government, anti-communist spirit within many of the governments of Central and South America, exemplified by PRI, is in a sense more dangerous than too many people in a emergency room at a hospital. Are you following me? God love you. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to Listener Support of the Winds of Change on WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is wrong. change.